Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Evers v. Estrue. Mr. Lowry.
Good morning, Your Honors. Martin Lowry for Dr. Evers. This case is all about the denial of due process. It is not about contract. Dr. Evers' complaint is not a contract dispute, nor is it a bid protest. None of the complaint's three counts request any form of contract relief or damages from the Social Security Administration or the United States. Counts 1 and 2 of the complaint each allege a constitutional tort or Bivens action by the individual responsible government employees who denied Dr. Evers procedural and substantive due process. None of those individual government employees has any contractual relationship with Dr. Evers. Count 3 alleges a cause of action under the Administrative Procedure Act for judicial review of the Social Security Administration's action in violating Dr. Evers' constitutional right to procedural and substantive due process and in failing to follow or in circumventing the applicable government regulations and the law in affecting Dr. Evers' suspension, the termination of his contract, his de facto debarment, and the secret determination that Dr. Evers was not a responsible contractor. None of the three counts of plaintiff's complaint is grounded in contract. There are no issues of contract interpretation. Dr. Evers does not seek money damages, specific performance, contract enforcement, reinstatement, or other contract remedies from the Social Security Administration, which is a defendant as to count 3 only. Dr. Evers' claim only tangentially involves his contract and bid protest. Dr. Evers has not requested reinstatement or that the award to other doctors be canceled and given to him. The nature of the relief sought by Dr. Evers as to count 3 is not contractual, but equitable in vindication.
There was an appeal in this case, was there not, initially?
There was no other appeal but this one, Your Honor.
Well, what happened with regard to appeal to the administrative board? Did they have a dismissal with prejudice?
They dismissed the case after dismissing without prejudice all of the matters that we are here on today. They said they had no jurisdiction to decide cases involving due process, torts,
were there two actions? Were there two separate actions they took? That is, didn't they offer to, if he withdrew, they would dismiss without prejudice, but ultimately they dismissed with prejudice?
Well, that's a kind of a difficult thing to respond to, Your Honor, because they said they had no jurisdiction to handle these claims. They did offer to dismiss them. I asked for reconsideration of the ruling, and in the time that it took to reconsider the ruling, they then dismissed the remainder of the case with prejudice, but there really was nothing there before them. Other than
because
the fact
they said they didn't have jurisdiction.
They said they didn't have jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Dr. Evers seeks to have his name cleared by invalidating the agency's actions and its erroneous findings, which are unsupported by any evidence that he is unfit to contract with the government and is a non-responsible contractor. He seeks to have the agency's files expunged of all the references of the August 1, 2003 incident, the August 15, 2003 termination, and the subsequent secret determination that Dr. Evers is a non-responsible contractor. Further, Dr. Evers did ask that the agency give honest and fair consideration to the other bids that he has submitted to the agency that have been wrongfully rejected, and that any and all prospective and current employers be given the good references that he deserves without any reference to the incident of August 1 and Dr. Evers' termination and the secret determination that he is a non-responsible bidder, and that the court find that the agency failed to follow the applicable regulations in this case and had deliberately sought to circumvent the applicable regulations and procedures. Dr. Evers' lawsuit is not a disguised contract claim. The case is based not on a breach of contract, but on a violation of Dr. Evers' constitutional rights to procedural and substantive due process. What is involved here is the action taken in concert by several individual government employees in summarily taking Dr. Evers' liberty interest and finding him unfit to contract with the government under circumstances which call into question Dr. Evers' good name, reputation, honor, and integrity without providing him any notice and a meaningful opportunity to be heard prior to effecting that action. And the agency acting through those same employees, violating Dr. Evers' constitutional rights and failing to follow or circumventing the applicable federal regulations and affecting Dr. Evers' suspension, termination, de facto debarment, and in secretly determining that he was not a responsible contractor. Excuse me. The mere existence of contract-related issues does not convert these actions into actions based on contract. This court retains the power to make rational distinctions between actions sounding genuinely in contract and those based on truly independent legal grounds. At pages 14 and 15 of its June 22, 2005 decision, the district court adopted the D.C. Circuit ruling in Megapulse Incorporated versus Lewis as providing the applicable standard for determining whether the Contracts Disputes Act applies to a given claim. Simply stated, under Megapulse, if neither the source of the rights upon which the plaintiff bases its claim, the type of relief sought or appropriate is contractual, the Contracts Disputes Act does not apply. Plaintiff's contract is neither the source of his rights nor the basis for the relief requested in his complaint. However, the district court wrongly concluded, without benefit of any analysis or discussion of plaintiff's liberty interest, that the source of the rights upon which Evers bases his claim is his contract with SSA, the alleged wrongful termination of its contract with him, and the results thereof. The source of the rights upon which Dr. Evers bases his claim is his liberty interest in his good name, reputation, honor, and integrity, his right to earn a living free of any stigma that all the defendants have placed on him now and will in the future. Dr. Evers' liberty interest is completely independent of his contractual relationship with SSA. The plaintiff was endowed with that right by his creator and is guaranteed that right by the Constitution of the United States.
Mr. Lowry, the doctor isn't precluded from applying for new contracts, is he?
Well, strictly speaking, no, but he can do it ad infinitum. He did subsequently apply for contracts, and he was found a non-responsible contractor based on this incident that occurred previously.
I'm aware of that. But if he were to apply and was turned down again, he does have administrative appellate relief, right? Or he could go to the court of claims.
If they don't award him a contract? I don't believe that is quite the procedure that he has to go through. I think he has to file a bid protest. In fact, he did so in this case.
Right. And you're saying that just that platform, that legal platform, doesn't provide him with the opportunity to establish the bona fides as a responsible contractor?
Well, it really doesn't give him an opportunity that particular procedure has to be referred to the Small Business Administration, which was not done in this case. And ultimately, I suppose that they could make a determination concerning whether or not he was a responsible bidder. They have taken ex-felons and designated them as responsible bidders. It seems like this is a very trifling thing to call somebody a non-responsible bidder about, but they did that. They didn't even tell them that they did it. They did it in secret. They gave them no notice. They gave them no opportunity to respond, which they are required to do under the decision in Old Dominion Dairy Products Incorporated. He didn't even know what happened to him. So it's not really an effective remedy. You have to come to court and get the district court to decide, listen, you know, you better give the man due process. They believe that due process after a deprivation is adequate and all the due process that is due, but every Supreme Court decision that ever dealt with the matter has said that before the government can act to take away life, liberty, or property, before there can be a deprivation, it has to be preceded by notice and a meaningful opportunity to respond. And they never gave him that.
Want to save some time for rebuttal, Mr. Lowry? I know you have.
Okay.
I mean, it's your time. You use it as you see fit. Thank you, Mr. Lowry. Mr. Moore?
Thank you. If it pleases the court, my brother counsel, Mr. Lowry, the fact of the matter is, I almost hate to use the phrase, but this is a if it walks like a duck case. The jurisdiction is lacking because this is a contract case. And if you look at the complaint, he complains of property and liberty interests in his contracts by reason of the which are lost by reason of the termination, suspension of work and termination of the contract, which deprived him of his interests in the balance of the contract term, a reasonable expectancy of a renewal of a contract. He talks about pinning a badge of infamy on him. In fact, there is nothing anywhere in the record, administrative or otherwise, which pins any badge of infamy. There is no involvement in any question of integrity, of personal representation, of his good name. It just doesn't exist. The bottom line is that because of an incident that arose out of the performance of his contract, the federal acquisition regulations required that since that contract was terminated by reason of deficient performance, that he be found by reason of the regulations as a non-responsible bidder. Now, being a non-responsible bidder is a very different thing than impugning the integrity, the honesty, the good reputation, the good name. They're two different animals entirely. So what we've got is we've got a claim in count one arising out of the contract termination, which should have gone through the processes under the Contract Dispute Act. Then the jurisdiction lies either with the General Services Board of Contract Appeals or with the Court of Federal Claims. That's the proper jurisdiction. And instead what happened was he decided to go to the Board of Contract Appeals, but he included those tort claims. They said, we don't have jurisdiction over that, and they gave him notice saying you can withdraw by a date certain within our 90-day jurisdictional window. And if you withdraw, you can proceed if you need to come back. He did not do that. He asked for reconsideration, but let the 90 days go by, and then asks for dismissal without prejudice. But the fact of the matter was the 90 days had gone by, and so the Board of Contract Appeals, an election which the plaintiff had made, is the place where everything kind of falls down.
Now, do you agree that they had already indicated they didn't have jurisdiction?
Over? Yes. Yes.
How can they dismiss something with prejudice if they don't have jurisdiction over?
Well, I think what they were dismissing was with prejudice was that portion of the complaint which had to do with the termination of the contract. They properly asserted jurisdiction over the contract issues and said, we don't have jurisdiction over the tort claims. So, with regards to that, we have the untimely requests to get out and the contract appeal board dismisses his case, and he's out of luck with regards to that issue. There's a whole separate thing going on with regards to the disappointed bidders claim. And the proper place to go for that would have been to the GAO or, again, to the Court of Federal Claims. And while counsel alluded briefly to the fact that there was an issue about whether or not he was, in fact, a small business, and the Social Security Administration admitted he was a small business and admitted it should have been referred to the Small Business Administration for determination of whether or not he was a responsible bidder, then the GAO then dismisses because it says, look, you belong with the Small Business Administration. Social Security says you belong with the Small Business Administration, and instead of going to the Small Business Administration, he files suit in the district court. And the Small Business Administration no longer has any jurisdiction because we've got the suit pending. So we've got another action which essentially divests the Small Business Administration of any jurisdiction that they might have had. And there was never any pursuit in the Small Business Administration by the plaintiff with regard to the question of whether he's a responsible bidder. And I'm going to say again that that does not impugn his integrity, his reputation, his good name.
Well, the reason for the termination of doctor was this dispute with the case supervisor, whatever she's called.
It was actually a woman, and she called one of his actions into question. As his contract supervisor, he blew up at her, and that was determined to be deficient performance under the contract.
Nothing else. That was it.
No, that's it. That's it. And of course, if you get into the question of whether or not that was a proper a discipline for the contract, we're right back at the same question. Who decides that? And it's the Board of Contract Appeals or the Court of Federal Claims, not this court, not the district court, as the judge in the district court found in granting our 12B6 motion. I was ticking off this whole list, and if you go through the counts 1 and 2 of the complaint, everything springs from the contract. If you look at the relief that they seek and the things that they're complaining about, it's all non-existent but for the existence of the contract. And you can say, look, we were arguing constitutional torts here, but if the constitutional torts arise out of the contracts, if in fact there are constitutional torts, and we're not conceding that by any way, if they arise out of the contract, it is in essence a contract action, and it is in essence an action which needs to be handled in the proper place via the proper administrative vehicles and appealed to the Federal Court of Claims, which is where it belongs.
Mr. Moore?
Sure.
Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you. Thank you. Count 3, I'm curious about that, the one that went to trial.
Yes.
The judge's reasoning for the dismissal of it was mootness?
Yes. The order ticks off every single remedy that the plaintiff sought. The judge asked for supplemental briefing at the end of the trial, saying, tell me exactly what you want me to do. And counsel responded with a list of, I think it was 12 remedies that he sought. And the court, in its order of September of 2007, goes through each and every single one of them and says, well, you're asking for a finding, but that's not relief I can grant. You're asking for us to do to essentially reinstate the contract. I've already found I don't have jurisdiction. And every single one of the things that counsel asked was either something that was not relief, which could be granted because contracts had long since expired, or because...
Well, was that mootness or lack of jurisdiction?
Well, the issue that was preserved for trial was whether or not this plaintiff had been de facto debarred or suspended from contracting with the Social Security Administration. And We concede, frankly, that there is jurisdiction to consider that. Not because that doesn't arise out of the contract that existed. That is something that is in the future. So we went through everything that he was asking. Of course, most of the relief that he was asking, in fact, went back to the contract. And as Judge Jarre says in his order, I can't do this because I've already dismissed the contract actions on a good number of those. And the ones that you're asking, such as we want Social Security Administration, plaintiff says we want Social Security Administration to give us the good references that we're entitled to in the event that we apply for a job. Well, the judge says, well, in the event doesn't really give me much of anything to lean on. It's kind of speculative. He asked for reinstatement of expired contracts. I cannot remember all of the things, but he ticked them off one at a time, laid out his reasons, and they're all laid out in the last two or three pages of his September order, which indicate even if I could do this, it would not change your position. And the case law is that if you don't, if the court can't change the position, there's in fact no controversy, and if there is no controversy, the case is moot.
Mr. Moore, if one is labeled not a responsible contractor in a particular situation and loses perhaps the fulfillment of that contract, in a subsequent bid, and I don't know what temporal aspect we should do with this hypothetical, but is do you have to label yourself as someone who was previously submitted, or does this trail in any way into a subsequent
contract? It does not. And in fact, there is a procedure where people who are excluded or from contracting are labeled on the excluded parties list, and those people are prohibited by law from contracting with the government.
And that's not our situation.
That is not our situation here. He was never listed on that list. And I would also point out that, in fact, the plaintiff, subsequent to one denial of a contract because he was non-responsible, submitted a number of other bids, one for which he was clearly not qualified, and two for which he would have been qualified but for the fact that he was required to have an unconditional medical license, and his medical license had been suspended for failure to comply with CME requirements. He had not completed the continuing medical education that he needed to, and for that reason, those two were denied. But what we're dealing with here is just, as I recall, three other bid protests besides the one where he was found not responsible, and then he just dropped it and never bothered to apply again, as far as I know. And Social Security Administration has made it very plain, and we did this in trial, that he remains absolutely free to bid. And his bids will be considered the same as anybody else's.
Was one of the rejections, did I understand you, based on the lack of medical license?
Two of them. And if you don't have any other questions, I'll sit down. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lowry.
Yes.
If the court would refer to Exhibit 5 to the contract, which is the letter of termination that Mr. Pascasimas wrote terminating this contract, it will see that they found Dr. Evers unfit to contract with the government based on vague, nonspecific charges of disorderly conduct, which, like a coat of white paint, covers a multitude of sins. And nobody really knows exactly what they meant by that. But it looks pretty horrific if you look at it. And to say that this is not defamation, I don't understand. The defendants have a knack of arguing that black is white, and they've done it consistently throughout this case, and they have misrepresented time and time again. They defamed this man. They took away his livelihood. And then they say, you know, so what? Take it to this administrative agency. We went to the administrative agency. We said, look, they've defamed him. There's a constitutional right to due process here. Sorry, we can't do anything about that. Okay? These employees did this. You know, they were angry with him. They wanted to get rid of him. They were looking for an excuse. and they succeeded in doing that. I think we've covered that very thoroughly in our briefs. We are not here on a contract action. We are here on a denial of due process. That's what's involved here. And it happened several times. It happened when they suspended him. It happened when they terminated him. It happened when they de facto debarred him. And when they found him to be a non-responsible contractor. He was entitled to notice and an opportunity to be heard before each and every one of those actions, and he simply wasn't given it. And that's what we are protesting about. We're not, you know, protesting about the fact that he didn't get a contract. I think that he was saying that the administrative agency could have handled the matter on the merits. Well, the merits are inextricably intertwined with the constitutional issues. How can they say whether or not the removal was proper unless they can decide the constitutional issues? They gave him absolutely no notice. To this day, he hasn't had any notice, you know, of what happened to him. He got no prior notice. The idea that you can come in with some after-the-deprivation type of procedure and that suffices as due process is foreign to our way of looking at things in this country. And then he talked about the excluded persons list. You get on that list if the agency takes formal debarment procedures or suspension procedures. And that often incorporates a trial-type hearing. Now, if an agency doesn't want to go through with a trial-type hearing, they do the same thing by just rejecting his bids. And they do it consistently. Or they find him non-responsible over a series of time. And there is case law that type of activity amounts to a de facto debarment. And it's amply quoted in our brief. And they did that. Now they talk about how Dr. Evers had his license suspended. Sure he did. And was for failure to keep up with continuing medical education requirements. But they didn't tell you that they put that condition in to the bids for contracts after Dr. Evers was affected by this action. In other words, they changed the standards. Not that they're not free to do that.
Well, Ms. Lowry, are you suggesting they changed it to target the doctor as opposed to making that a new requirement generally?
So they wouldn't have to deal with him. They went to the Internet and they found out, he's on probational status. So anybody on probational status would say is not eligible or qualified for a contract. Are there any other questions?
Apparently not.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lowry. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.